It's that time on the radio where we listen to Bill Blevins from Blevins Franks. Hi there, Bill.
Hi, Howard. How are you?
I'm very well. And let's see. If someone has got capital they wish to invest, how should they go about choosing which investments to buy? So that's our subject today. Now, I believe that the most common investment assets, besides cash, are shares and bonds. Can you explain what the difference is between them and what role do they each play in your portfolio?
They are distinctly different to shares or equities, as they're often called, and bonds, and there are a variety of different types of bonds, as there are different types of shares. Shares or equity are an investment in a living business. They are real assets. If you buy shares in GlaxoSmithKline, you're buying an asset in their business, and your fortunes in holding those shares will go up or down in accordance with the good fortune or bad fortune of the company in which you have invested. Bonds come in different shapes and sizes. For many people, the lower risk end of bonds is UK gilts, which is where the UK government borrows money from the public to fund its budget. There's euro bonds for the European economies, and also there are treasuries funding borrowing by the US government, and those are a means generally of raising billions to help fund the economy of the various countries around the world. You can also buy corporate bonds, often issued by FTSE 100 or Dow Jones Index top flight companies, where the yield will be a little better than government bonds, and your fortunes with those bonds will go up or down in relation to the credit worthiness of the company borrowing the money. There are also corporate bonds at the lower end of the spectrum, where there's a greater risk of a failure to pay your income dividend at any point in time, but carefully researched, you can buy into a fund, a portfolio of these small company corporate bonds, where the yield can be as much as the income can be as much as 7 or 8, even a bit more, percent per annum. And at the same time, if they've been carefully selected, the capital value of your investment in those bonds may also go up, and would be expected to go up over a period of time. So, you know, whereas cash remains a common worry-free type investment, it really isn't worry-free in the sense that cash deposits are paying a much lower rate of return than the real rate of inflation, in my opinion. Whereas if you invest in shares and bonds, whilst there is fluctuation in the value of those assets, over time they tend to go up far more significantly than cash on deposit. And those people who consider cash to be a risk-free investment are clearly mistaken, have been mistaken for the last 10 years, because had you been in cash for the last 10 years, you'd been making on average 1.5% per annum, whereas if you'd been invested, for example, in the FTSE 100, you would have more than doubled your money over the same period of time. So it's horses for courses, and you need to get balance in your portfolio to make sure you've got the right proportion of each to satisfy what you're looking to achieve and your tolerance to that wretched four-letter word, risk.
Yeah. Well, there are so many shares out there to choose from, Bill. How does one decide which ones to buy?
I think that there isn't a one-size-fits-all solution in answer to that question, Howard. What you will decide to buy will be partly your own judgment, in fact, in some cases, entirely your judgment, but you may wish to be guided by the expertise and advice that you can get from financial advisors like Blevins Franks, so that you are selecting shares or equities in businesses where we have access to expertise, which gives a clear indication of a likelihood of producing above average returns on a regular basis. And it will be in the selection process determined by you and a Blevins Franks advisor working together in a sense of a partnership to talk about what your levels of tolerance are to investment risk. And based upon that and a number of other considerations, the selection process will then go ahead one step at a time, trying to bring together sufficiently low risk assets to give you a higher than average return compared to what otherwise you might have expected, and for you to then agree to that is where you'd like to go, and of course to adjust and manage that on a regular basis by review.
Okay. So what's your advice on how to choose equity funds? What are the various aspects we need to consider when choosing funds and fund managers?
Well, I think there's several aspects. One is, of course, that you have to try to select in which markets are you going to invest your money in equities. You've got choices between, you know, the giants of the US equity market, the UK equity market, the European equity markets. And then, of course, you can move on to the medium markets of Southeast Asia, to the higher risk markets of the smaller economies around the world. And getting that conundrum right and getting the right value in each sector of the equity markets correct is what makes a sensible balanced portfolio that will give you a lower risk compared to the returns that it can achieve. One of the great things, of course, in the context of Blevins-Frank's investment management process is that Blevins-Frank's have developed a long-term professional, very successful working relationship with a company called the Russell Group. The Russell Group are specialists and have been for something approaching, I think, about 90 years, reviewing investment managers around the world, looking at how they have performed, looking at the procedures and policies and structures that they have in place to ensure that they're capable of producing above average returns. And the Russell Group will then recommend to Blevins-Frank's investment managers in each of the specialist areas around the world, so that in the United States market, for example, if you're looking to invest in dollar investments and you want to invest in US equity, then you might have five or six different US equity managers in your portfolio, ranging from a specialist on the larger companies, somebody might be working on the medium-sized companies, somebody might be working on the smaller companies, all of them specialists in their own niche area. But that specialism is likely to bring about a much better return than one general manager of US equities who tries to be a generalist across the whole range of equity choices, instead of using one manager who's a specialist in each of the different areas.
So, Bill, do the same principles apply for investing in bonds?
To a certain extent, they do. One of the key reasons for having, for example, government bonds is to dampen down the overall risk of a portfolio by having bond assets, bonds issued by the US, the UK and the European governments, because they are almost risk-free. And the yield from them reflects the fact that they're almost risk-free, and therefore they will be paying a shade above bank deposit and building society interest rates, but not much. Why? Because you're in an investment which is pretty much got guaranteed capital and no risk of the value of the capital falling, although the prices of bonds do rise and fall in line with markets, and you can make quite a lot of money by investing in bonds, getting an appropriate spread. Government bonds, as I say, are risk-free. As I mentioned earlier, there are also borrowings required by industry. They will be out in the market issuing bonds, which means that they're trying to borrow money from the public to fund their business for new acquisitions, business growth, cash flow, all sorts of reasons. And from the FTSE 100, for example, in the UK, where they'll be looking out to borrow money to fund their business in the same way that government bonds help to fund the UK budget, they will be paying a premium above government bond rates, because obviously as a corporate entity there's more risk of failure. And as you go down the size scale of companies, down to the FTSE 250 and even the smaller companies, you can generate a portfolio by using funds. Generally speaking, you can generate a portfolio of high yield corporate bonds, often yielding 7 or 8%, and with the potential for the capital to increase over time. And for income investors, they are often thought of as a very useful addition to an overall portfolio.
And what other assets could people consider, Bill?
I think most people do consider other investment assets without fully appreciating it, because for many people, one of the most substantial investments they have, of course, is the real estate in which they live. And it is an important consideration when Blevins-Frank's are advising clients to look in a holistic way at the value of the real estate in which the client lives, to make sure that things are in balance. There is a tendency, not so common these days, but sort of 10 or 15 years ago, it was fairly common to be, in a sense, overhoused and undercapitalized, because people would buy large properties and then frankly find 10 or 15 years down the line that running those properties was becoming an expensive liability. And so very often it's worth looking at your real estate. I'm not suggesting for a moment you should be thinking about selling your property necessarily, but you ought to be looking at your real estate as an investment, because over time it will form part of your total wealth portfolio. There are other things like venture capital funds, and there are businesses out there now borrowing money from the public to lend to other people's people on, you know, business to business loans. But the fact is, as far as Blevins Franks is concerned, I think that we generally speaking believe that with cash, bonds and equities, you have a vast range of choices within those three asset classes that virtually don't require anything other than those to actually put together a sensible portfolio that is properly balanced in terms of risk and gives you a very decent return above inflation.
Mm. So when helping clients to set up their portfolio, how do you determine how much of each asset they should have in their portfolio?
Oh, that is, again, quite a difficult question to answer, Howard. I think it matters most of all that there is a healthy and open discussion about what the objectives, what the assets of the client are now, and where they are now in financial terms, and where they want to be in the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years' time, what their estate transfers are going to be at the end of their life, where they want the money to go. And when you've got all of that information from the client in an open, honest and free discussion, then selecting the amount that you put of each asset class, the amount of cash that's held, and of course that's important always to hold a sufficient supply of cash, and possibly, if you're living in the Eurozone, to have a substantial proportion of that in euros to avoid the currency exchange rate risk that you know we've all experienced over the last few years, with rates now to sterling being as difficult as they are. But when you know you've got a sufficient cash buffer inside your portfolio, then of course you can move on to blue chip equities and then go up and down the scale, if you like, rather than up to the smaller companies. And bonds are in there, as I say, to suppress the level of risk. And the amount that you have of each will largely be determined by the expertise of your advisor and your willingness to accept their recommendations. Of course, you know, for the vast majority of new clients, we trim our recommendations to make sure that they sit comfortably with the client, because we want to work in partnership with our clients over a long period of time, and as we make healthy returns for clients, to find that we can then, if necessary, rebalance the portfolio to improve the returns once the client has understood that portfolio management is an exceptional skill, and one at which Blevins Franks have proved to be entirely competent over the last 40 years in advising expatriates in Spain.
Yeah. So how often, you just mentioned it, Bill, how often do you review your clients' portfolios, and why is it so important?
Well, I think it's, you know, we review them formally on a half yearly basis, because anything much less than that is too short a timescale in markets that go up and down to make any kind of reasoned, sensible judgment. You're too otherwise manipulated by emotions. But of course, it's also important to review your portfolio in an ad hoc way whenever your circumstances change, or the circumstances surrounding your investment or your residence change, tax rules change. Of course, they demand something more than perhaps than a half yearly review. If there's a death in the family, if there's you know, children born, if there are children starting fee paying school, has that cropped up since the last review? All of those things might necessitate a review of your portfolio. So anything which was the arrangement of discussions, putting together the portfolio in the first place, if any of those factors move in any material way, then really you do need to sit down and ask your advisor, this has happened, what do you think I should do about it? It may be it's best left for the time being, but nonetheless, if you've asked the question, you won't miss a trick.
Yeah. Well, many people are nervous about moving their savings out of the safety of cash into other investments. So how can you put their minds at rest about risk?
Yeah, it's a challenging one, Howard. You know, I understand entirely why lots of people who enter into retirement, having accumulated wealth during their working life, having perhaps sold their UK property, the money tucked up safely in the bank or the building society always seems like a safe place to be. But, you know, I would challenge anyone who thinks like that who came into cash, 10 years ago, to look at the returns that you would have had, the net returns you'd have had from cash, paying on average over that period of the last 10 years, 1 or 1.5% annum, when inflation has been going on at well over 3% in real terms. Whereas had you taken the same money and put it into a balanced portfolio of investments, where, for example, the FTSE 100 index has doubled its size in the last 10 years. If you'd have put 100,000 in, you'd now have 200,000. If you'd have been in a cash deposit, you might have been lucky to have had 10 or 11% over that period. There's a phenomenal difference. Now, of course, the price you pay for being in a balanced portfolio of equities and bonds and cash is that there is a degree of volatility. Things go up, and as we've seen in the last few months, things go down. But the fact of the matter is, the equity markets and the bond markets are one of those places where the law of gravity is defied, and that what goes down does go up again. And over an extended period of time, the advantage sometimes of markets falling is you're able to buy in at better value. And so over a period of time, there is no question that investing in real assets, that is to say, loans to businesses, loans to the government, actually taking a stake in real businesses by buying shares in them, there is an inevitability that over a period of time they will produce more than putting your money away in a lazy, sleepy bank account. There simply is no comparison. And the fact is that there's often, and I think I've said this before, there is often more risk in being out of the markets, as has proven to be the case over the last 10 years, than being in them.
Yeah, yeah. So, Bill, the website at blevinsfranks.com is a good place for people to get more information.
Sure. Sure. I mean, if you're thinking about how you might select investments, how you might balance a portfolio, whether you'd like to review an existing portfolio to get Blevins Frank's opinion of it, you're promised an impartial and objective review. That's the nature of our business. We lace our investment advice, of course, with very competent and worthwhile tax planning advice to make sure if you do make profits, you don't give too much of it away, but you pay unto Caesar what is due. So why don't you go to the website at www.blevinsfranks.com. There'll be an office near you, and if you contact them, they would be delighted to hear from you.
A pleasure as always, Bill. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks a lot, Howard. Have a good week.